At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Hey guys, and welcome to Mysteries and Histories with me, your host, Georgia Marie. This podcast audio is adapted from my YouTube channel. I wanted to make my content more accessible for those of you on the go, and we all love a podcast. So if I ever reference anything on screen or a photograph, please bear in mind this audio was originally made for video. It won't hinder your listening experience at all, but just to save any confusion. And if you do want to go and subscribe to my channel, I'm just Georgia Marie over on YouTube. And with that, let's get into it. Hey guys, I'm Georgia and welcome back for another episode in my mystery series, where today I want to talk about a case that happened very locally to me back in 1992. This isn't a case with loads of information available, but it is one that remains unsolved, and the likelihood is that you've never heard of it. Even living just down the road from where this took place, I know I'd never heard of it until a friend recommended that I cover this case. That's a sure sign to me that a fresh bit of coverage is needed. I am genuinely shocked that this case isn't higher profile. It has all of the makings of a case that should have been on the front page, as you'll come to see throughout this episode, and I have no idea why it wasn't. Also, I just want to say, I really hope you guys don't mind some of these shorter episodes recently. I'm currently living at my girlfriend's parents' house whilst we're in the process of buying our own house, and the Wi-Fi here is pretty awful. It's really, really bad. Uploading long videos has been a nightmare, and constantly having to travel between here and my parents' house to work. It's not been fun, but instead of letting the Wi-Fi defeat me, I decided this is probably the perfect time to focus on some smaller cases that I might not have thought to do before or would have considered too short. And a shorter video is better than no video, right? So today we're travelling to a small village called Eversley in Hampshire. It's very much on the Berkshire-Hampshire border. You literally go 100 metres down the road from where this happened and you're in Berkshire. Eversley is sort of smack bang in the middle of the Reading Basingstoke Farnborough Triangle, and it really is your very typical English village. There's not much going on apart from a couple of really lovely pubs, an antique shop, and some lovely routes to take your horses out on. It's the kind of place where I would love to live when I'm a bit older. It really is lovely. It's certainly not the kind of place you would expect someone to be murdered. Jacqueline Palmer Radford was 40 years old and had two children, sons aged 6 and 17. A year and a half before her death, she had gone through a divorce, but she still lived in the family home with her sons. Most sources describe the divorce as fairly civil, however I did come across one comment on a blog post about this case on the truecrimeenthusiast.co.uk from a man called John Brown, claiming to be a relative of Jacqueline's, and he said that the divorce was acrimonious. Of course, this could be a random person on the internet deciding to do a bit of trolling. It could be a legitimate relative. There's no way of knowing for sure, so do take that with a pinch of salt. After the divorce, Jacqueline continued living in the family home, Riversdale House on the street, the main road through Eversley. She lived there with the kids, and her husband had been the one to move out. They'd lived at Riversdale House for about 2 years, having lived in Aldershot previously with the husband, who had been in the army. Jacqueline was devoted to her children, her whole life revolved around them, and as her father said in an interview with BBC's Crime Watch 11 weeks after her death, Jacqueline worried about her kids all the time. She was always making sure they had everything they needed to thrive. They were always her priority. But after the divorce, it seems like Jacqueline had decided that an overhaul of her life was needed. She needed to focus on herself more. She applied for a course with the Open University, she got involved in a number of sports, and started socialising more, making a lot of new friends. She was definitely a very well-liked woman, and it seems like her life was just beginning for her, but then it was brutally taken away. On Wednesday the 1st of April 1992, Jacqueline started her morning as usual, with the rush to get her two boys ready for school and college. Her 6-year-old went to primary school in local Crowthorne, and from what I can gather, it seems that her older 17-year-old son went to Farnborough College. After dropping her sons off at around 9 a.m, her 6-year-old at his primary school and the 17-year-old at Crowthorne train station, Jacqueline headed back home. By 9:15, she was talking with her mum on the house phone, telling her that she had plans to go shopping in nearby Basingstoke. Her mum said that she sounded happy. She mentioned nothing of any concerns for her life or for her safety. Jacqueline was just normal. That's the last time we know somebody had contact with her, and we don't know if she ever did manage to go shopping. Probably not. What we do know is that 4 p.m. came around and Jacqueline failed to pick up her youngest son from school and her oldest son from the train station. Her oldest son had to make his own way home, and at 5:30 p.m. he arrives back at Riversdale House to find Jacqueline laying on the kitchen floor, dead. She had been suffocated after being assaulted in the home. Some sources state that she'd been raped, but she was found fully dressed. No child should ever have to go through that, finding their mother dead, and I really hope he got all of the support he needed in the aftermath. I can't even begin to imagine how traumatising that would be for anyone, let alone a 17-year-old boy. The subsequent investigation would unveil some very strange things that had been happening the day before and on the day of the murder. There are so many strange things here in this case, I'm genuinely shocked that it's never been solved. It was just a very strange series of events, and you'll soon see what I mean when I say I don't understand why this wasn't front page news. The day before her death, Jacqueline had been at the school picking her son up as usual, chatting with some of the other mums at the school gate. One of these mothers would soon come forward saying that she'd seen something very strange that afternoon. A man sat in a dark brown hatchback car outside the gates. She said it was possibly a Vauxhall Chevette, and the woman noted that it was particularly strange as the man didn't seem to be watching the gates or the school. It didn't look like he was waiting for a child. He was sat there staring straight ahead and seemed tense and serious. He looked strange and out of place enough that this woman picked up on it and remembered. She would later describe the man as around 40 years old with sandy coloured hair, wearing a white shirt and a grey pullover. He had a pale complexion and actually looked ill. The police did release a photo fit of this man, hoping to find out who he was and question him, but he never came forward. And that wouldn't be the only time a brown hatchback car would be noted in this story. A man was on his way to work in Reading on the morning of the 1st, driving through Eversley on his journey. At one point, he stopped behind a car, a brown Vauxhall Chevette, which was indicating to turn into a driveway, but it wasn't moving despite there being no oncoming cars. The man said he sat behind that car for a good 10 seconds, just waiting, before the car slowly pulled into a driveway of what he would later say he thinks was Riversdale House. This would have been around the same time that Jacqueline was off on the school run, and she would have returned home about 10 minutes later. No one ever reported seeing the car leave the driveway, but we can assume that it did leave, because when Jacqueline was on the phone with her mum at 9:15 a.m, she never mentioned anything about a strange car, which probably would be something you'd mention. We don't know who was driving the car at this point, whether it was a man or a woman, but the assumption is that it was the same man who was seen the day before outside the school. And that isn't the only strange car in this story. Just down the road from Riversdale House, just over the Berkshire border, is a pub called the Tally Ho, and opposite, a small block of offices. It's now called Cousin's House, I'm not sure if that was the same in 1992, I assume it probably was. Jacqueline would have driven past these offices that morning on her way to drop her sons in Crowthorne. That morning, a number of employees noticed there was a strange beige car in the car park that wasn't usually there. In an office as small as this one, you know everyone's car, you know all the employees, so you'll notice something out of place. One office worker noted that there was a woman sat in this car wearing a green scarf over her head and reading a newspaper. It very much seemed like she didn't want to be seen, like she was trying to hide her face, and that was weird. The same worker noted later that morning that the car was still there but had changed parking spaces, and now the woman had removed the scarf. She was described as pale with short ginger or red hair and very slim. She was parked there until at least mid-morning, and it's not known if this woman had anything to do with Jacqueline's death. It may well have been a coincidence, but it's odd there was the same morning just metres down the same road.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Something I do think is important to note in this case is that there's not many places to park down this road, down the street, unless you're on someone's driveway. It's a fairly skinny country road, so if you're parked at the side, you'd probably be in the way. If you're waiting for somebody and need to park up down this road, either the office car park or the pub car park are probably the smartest places to go. I know that's what I'd do anyway. Police have asked to speak to this woman, but she's never come forward. Now, you would think that two strange possible witnesses slash suspects would be odd enough in a case like this, but there are actually two more people the police want to talk to. Witnesses reported seeing a smartly dressed man in a grey suit with a clipboard outside Riversdale House that morning. Now, there had been plans to sell the house eventually, but it wasn't yet on the market. And there has been speculation this man could have been an estate agent or a surveyor, maybe taking a look at the house for valuation or something. That's certainly the kind of guy he looked like anyway, that's how he was dressed. And he was described as being between 28 and 35 with short, neat, light hair. That same morning, another man was seen running down the street at about 11 a.m. carrying two bags, a Sainsbury's bag and an airline holdall. He was about 300 yards from the home, near the mini roundabout at the White Hart pub, wearing a raincoat, jogging bottoms and trainers. From my own memory, there's no longer a roundabout at White Hart pub, I don't think, and Google Maps also confirmed that for me, so I think it was just what would now be just down the road. In Jacqueline's driveway, investigators found a gold pen that they speculated was dropped by the man with the clipboard. This was quite a distinctive pen, but it was common enough, retailing at the time for between £30 and £32. It was expensive enough that you would notice if it was missing, it wasn't exactly your standard biro, and the pen didn't belong to Jacqueline or her sons. Inside the house, they found a university prospectus with a note written on it. 10:40 Lawrence Gillam. Now this certainly seems like Jacqueline had made an appointment at 10:40 a.m. with a man called Lawrence Gillam, but there was no date written. We don't know if this meeting, if that's what it was supposed to be that day, the day she died, or if it had already passed, or if it was planned for the future. And despite searches, police never located this Lawrence. I do wonder if Lawrence might have been the man seen with the clipboard that morning. Maybe he really was an estate agent there to value the house. And I suppose it would make sense if she didn't mention to her mum on the phone that morning that she had an estate agent come around. Maybe she didn't want anyone to know just yet that she was in the process of selling her house. But then again, I would assume that investigators did go to all the local estate agents to find out if they had any contact with Jacqueline in regards to a house sale, or if they had a colleague called Lawrence. If this was an innocent estate agent, why wouldn't they come forward? There could have been a lot of other reasons why somebody dressed in a smart suit could be looking at the house with a clipboard, but estate agent just seems to make the most sense, and that seems to be what the police have gone with, but it could have been anything. So that's four people. The man in the brown car, the woman in the beige car, the running man, and a possible estate agent slash smartly dressed man, all of whom have never come forward, despite an appeal on Crime Watch 11 weeks after the crime. That's very weird, especially in a place as small as Eversley and the surrounding areas. I can attest that gossip like a murder would have spread quick. Gossip about potential people of interest would have spread quick. Eversley really isn't the kind of place you just accidentally find yourself wandering around, so these four people had to have had a reason to be in the area. Now I know what you're probably all thinking, it was the husband, and he was of course at the top of the suspect list in the early days of the investigation, but as I mentioned earlier, he actually no longer lived in the area. He now lived in Sussex, about an hour and a half away, and was held by the police for 2 days, but was ultimately released without charge as he had a good alibi. From what I can tell, it certainly doesn't seem like her husband is considered a suspect at all now. An article on unsolvedmurders.co.uk, though, does state their husband was German-born and that at some point in the investigation, the police did go to Germany to search there. So I don't think you can say they didn't do their due diligence on that one. They definitely looked into it, but there was nothing on him. But despite this, some do criticise the investigation as a whole into this murder. At first, it was handled by the Basingstoke police before being transferred to Aldershot, and within just 2 years, the investigation team went from 35 people to just 3 people looking at this case. Over the past 20 years, more appeals have been made, but there have never been any big breaks. As far as anyone can find, Jacqueline wasn't a woman with any big secrets. She wasn't involved in anything illegal or illicit. She didn't have enemies or even people who didn't really like her. People canvassed the neighbourhood and found no gossip or private issues, which is what makes this crime so baffling, because we can probably all agree that her murder feels planned. If the perpetrator was the man in the brown car, then he was definitely following her for a while, probably getting to know her routine. But why Jacqueline? Why a middle-aged, recently divorced mother of two? She seems like a very unusual victim of something like this, doesn't she? If the motivation was sexual in nature and she might have been raped, as some sources say, then the general target for this is usually, not always, but usually a younger woman or even a teenager. Why a middle-aged woman for this? Which makes us think that it was committed by someone who knew her, further backed up by the fact that there was no sign of a break-in on the property. It looked as if Jacqueline just let whoever this was into her house happily. The police said at the time, if she had suffered a violent death, we would think we were looking for a stranger. But on this occasion, we have someone who doesn't appear to have struggled to get on the premises, and she was then suffocated. Who did it and why is still a complete mystery. The fact that her body wasn't moved and no effort was made to hide it makes it seem like it was spur of the moment, but the car, the following, seems planned. This case is just such a web. If I were to take a guess, I'd say Jacqueline did have a planned meeting that day, perhaps with somebody she believed to be an estate agent to take a look at the house. She let him into the house happily, and he killed her. Maybe this was someone who just wanted to kill, simple as that. But those people were actually fairly rare. I saw lots of speculation that this was a lover of Jacqueline's, which may have been the case. Perhaps she'd met somebody in the last 18 months in her new socialising lifestyle that she just hadn't told any family or friends about yet. Loved ones do say this would have been very unlike her, that she wasn't the type to have secret love affairs, but you really never know. It's not like she would have been cheating on anyone, she was totally within her rights to start a new relationship if she wanted to. But she didn't tell a single person if that was the case, no one knew.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
It would make sense that this would be a person that she would let happily into her house, but it still doesn't make a difference, because there's never been any clue as to who this possible lover could be. And finally, I want to mention talk of an organised killing. As crazy as it sounds, I actually think this case ticks a lot of the boxes of potential organised crime. Jacqueline being watched, odd cars nearby, no one ever coming forward, not a single clue left behind. The motivation behind this though? I don't know. The only person I can think of that would benefit from Jacqueline's death could have potentially been her ex-husband, but there is zero evidence that he was involved. We don't know enough about their relationship, about him, to accuse him of anything like this, so it's just purely speculation. And again, not many people go through what was said to be a pretty good divorce and then put out a hit on their wife. That doesn't make sense. Although the movies would have you thinking otherwise, organised crimes, organised murders, really aren't particularly common. Especially a hit out on a 40-year-old village-living divorced mother of two with no known enemies or secrets. This case is definitely one that needs to be spoken about more. The details need to get out there. This was only 29 years ago. The people who did this are very, very likely still alive and free, living their lives without consequence. Her youngest son will only be in his mid-30s and her children deserve closure here. So anyone with any information about this case is asked to contact the police on 101. In the sources down below, I'll leave a link to BBC's Crime Watch segment of this case just so you can see actual reconstructions. It could be really helpful, especially if you do live in the area. Thank you so much for tuning in this week and I'll see you next time. Bye guys.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.